In this episode, we are talking to Mark Brinson, maker of Evil Bone Water. This is a topically applied liniment that's like a high-quality, made-in-America version of Zhenggu Shui. We'll talk about the history of the formula, how it's made, what it can be used for, how it's applied, and more. So stay tuned. So I think this is kind of fortuitous because last week I went on a trail run, and I'm pretty sure I gave myself a stress fracture in my second metatarsal. And I feel like this is something that, like, Zhenggu Shui was specifically made for.
Yeah, that was one of its original designs. So yeah, it's a really, really interesting formula. I have, since I was back in school in 1995, really, really liked it. It was one of those first things. Before that, I came into the profession as from a physical therapist standpoint, and before that, from a massage therapist standpoint, specializing in rehab, and then before that, a functional trainer specializing in rehab. And so, like, the bar to kind of impress me was pretty high on stuff. I think the first one topical that really impressed me was Biofreeze. And I don't know if you know, when Biofreeze, like, came on the scene in like maybe 1990 or so, it actually had some Chinese herbs in it. I did not know that until later on. But anyway, I got into school and I started seeing everybody, like all the Chinese instructors, using Zhenggu Shui. It was like their deal. And it actually means rectify bone water, correct bone water. So the original formula was intended to help heal bone quickly. That's a 500-year-old formula, considered, believe it or not, in China, a national treasure. Now, whenever I used it, I loved it. It was like a clinic mainstay. I never really considered it maybe a national treasure, but I was like, yeah, this is really good stuff. And I found out all these additional uses for it. So if I needed something to numb a point, if I needed something to heal a bone quick, wound healing quick, all sorts of things, it was like my go-to. I probably used it on almost every patient, even as a prep for other things. And so, I mean, this might date me just a little bit, but when I opened my clinics, I made sure that each treatment room had a bottle in there. And I would give it to people for homework sometimes. So say, if, for instance, you know, you get a stress fracture, you definitely got to do homework on that, because instead of 8 weeks, you might be looking at 4 weeks, you might be looking at less. So it really did its job. And then, you know, but also back then, I mean, I think I was getting it for $5 a bottle. Up until maybe 1999, 2000, Chinese patents used to be just dirt cheap. I mean, we would get like the real deal from China. The patents were anywhere from $2 to $5. And if you paid $5 or $6 for a patent, you were like, wow, you know, it was crazy. But you had to be real careful about quality and whatnot, or knockoffs. You know, they're famous for knockoffs. They don't do it quite as much in medicine as other things, but because there's a little bit of ethics involved in that. So I cruise along and I see it get degraded over the years. 1999, it lost Sanchi, which is one of those magical things that's like in Yunnan Baiyao. And it lost Sanchi. It lost a couple of other expensive ones, but still, it was a good product. I mean, it didn't make it out of the treatment room. And for me to carry something clinically, it's got to reach a pretty high bar. So anyway, cruising along. And then I started to see something happening around 2010. And then accelerating over time, like all the Chinese patents started going chunk, 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 as far as the prices go. So things that used to be $2 were $4, then $6, then $8. And then as the Chinese really embraced sort of the capitalism, communism, like, you know, mode, the prices started to really kind of jack up on some things. And it gets a little tough, because I'm not one that, you know, this stuff is weird to people. For us, it's bread and butter. It's every day. Like, why wouldn't you do something? But for other people, they'll go in and CVS and they'll pay, you know, $15, $20 for some NyQuil. But to get some Yin Chao from us is like crazy sometimes. So I would always try to keep things real reasonable. But honestly, what happened about, actually, it's 4 years ago now, is I went to buy some Zhenggu Shui. And not only had it been degraded a couple more times, but the company Solstice had bought the exclusive import rights to the US. And it was their first product. And so Solstice bought it. And not only did they knock it down a couple more levels, but my wholesale price was like $13 or $14 a bottle. And that finally got to the point where I'm like, I love this stuff. but I can't pay $13 or $14 a bottle for it as a master herbalist. I can clearly make this. So what happened is I'm like, all right, well, if I were going to make this, I want to make it right. Let me take and find the original formula, everything that's practical put back into it, all the processes put back into it, and make it the way that it's supposed to be intended to be made, and see how it goes. So anyway, I found out some interesting things along the way. First of all, it is a 500-year-old formula. So Shengge Shui, 500-year-old formula.
And did it like start with martial artists or things like that, or?
It started with a guy in a small town in China. It really,
Yeah.
really did. And if you read the formula as written, it had probably 50 herbs in it. And a lot of them were just things that were local to his area that aren't repeatable. You can't reproduce it. But a lot of them are. And anyway, but I kept thinking to myself, like when I was reading through all this stuff, like national treasure. Why do you get national treasure? And also, one of the things that kind of stuck with me, which was a selling point to a lot of my patients over the years, is I would tell them the story about the name Shengge Shui. So when I was in school, I had these 18 great double doctors from China, MDs, DOMs from China, and they were all had been heads of their department. They were all just fantastic physicians. And so when one of the students asked, he was like, "Well, what does Shengge Shui mean? What does it translate as?" And he said, "Oh, it translates as a evil bone water."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "What?" And I'm learning some medical Chinese, and I'm like, "That doesn't mean evil bone water." And then it happened, like again, another independently, another master herbalist, was like, "Oh, evil bone water." And I'm going, "What? That's not. It means correct or rectify bone water," which there isn't a really great translation for that. So I'm like, whatever. But anyway, so I would tell patients that over the years, and the name kind of stuck. And that's kind of what it does. It's for healing anything rapidly. So anyway, I never know why they would laugh when they said that or call it evil bone water. But I did find out that during the Cultural Revolution, the Chinese government absconded, took the formula from
Oh,
the family.
yeah.
And they were like, "This formula is fantastic. We need it for the people for the greater good. So we're going to take this and we're going to use it," which could be why the herbalists were like, "Oh, evil bone water." Now they still used it, but at the same time. So anyway, I researched this thing and I made it the way it was supposed to be made. And I was like, "Oh my God, that is fantastic." And all my patients that used to use it, they were like, "Holy God, this is like way, way better." And this is almost 4 years ago to the day, just about, that I made my first batch. And I bumbled around making the first batch. It took me several months to research the proper proportions, to research the proper, everything for it, because
Yeah.
there's a couple of rare herbs that are attainable, but they're just rare herbs. And we cruise along, make it a few batches, and we're like, "Oh my gosh, this is just crazy better." And so I'm like, "Well, if I'm going to make my own version, I'm going to call it evil bone water." So Zheng Zhegu Shui, so rectify evil bone water, is the real name. And then when we started using the imperial grade herbs, it went to a whole completely other level, which is then you were like, "Okay, I get it. National treasure." Now, I will mention this, that the actual version that you can get in China, while it doesn't have some of the rare stuff that we have, especially in the amounts that we have or the quality that we have, we're getting imperial grade. It still does have a lot of that really, really good stuff that makes it better than our version. But anyway, that's the long and the short story of it. So, it became Evil Bone Water, which is a strange name, and I'll tell you that almost nobody comes in and asks for it by name ever anywhere, but they remember the name, and because it's so strange, they'll call it bone juice, or they'll call it this or that. But they come in, whereas they never would come in and ask for, Shengge Shui ever. Yeah, so it's been quite a journey with that.
So what's the manufacturing process like? Because it's called Zhengge Shui. Shui means water, but is it really water-based? Is it alcohol-based? Is it some combination of those?
So that's where things get really kind of interesting. So our first bump up, we had some friends that are our agents now for Imperial Grade Herbs. We had stressed the American suppliers so much with our first offering to other people that I had orders that I couldn't get them out. So we decided to bump up. So most American wholesalers, you can only get B or C quality herbs, which I never knew at that point. Mm-hmm. I thought mm-hmm. we could get well above, but for the most part, we get B or C. And so I kind of bumped it way up. And so we started making these things. So the first thing in that process is you've got these herbs that really need to be stewarded properly. You know, if they're B or C grade, I wouldn't have obsessed on it quite so much. But when you're getting stuff that's like 30-year-old cinnamon skin from the mountains of Guangdong and is just these huge sheet, you're like, oh my gosh, I got to make sure that I do this right. So it's become quite involved. But the main part of the process that's different than most is with most good old martial arts formulas, time. You know, if you can stick a bunch of herbs in a vat and you can agitate them regularly over 6 months to a year, you will get a pretty decent extraction from it. But what we've done, the goodness that's out of the herbs, the stuff that we're looking for out of herbs is either water soluble or alcohol soluble. Mm-hmm. So usually the two don't intersect very, very well. But what we do is we do a traditional water decoction initially with the herbs after a good soak for anywhere from 2 to usually 48 hours. We've found a way where we can bump that just a little bit further. You have to be careful bumping herbs a little bit further in a water soak because they like bacteria too. I mean, they really will. Yeah. So you've got to, there's ways that you can kind of trick that. So if we can get a good, on my end, if I can get a good 48 hour soak and then we get a good fire decoction where we can bring that big batch up to boil in at least 20 minutes and then boil it just like a water decoction for 20 minutes. Adding some stuff at the end, etc. Then we will take that, and typically you could just take that and you could put it into alcohol after it cooled.
The strain decoction?
No, not the strain decoction, just okay. The whole decoction. So you would add alcohol to it, and that after a couple of weeks would probably make a pretty good formula at that point. It's like a kind of a combined dual thing where you're getting the extraction of both. What does happen with that, though, is you get a lot of what I used to think was sediment, you know, probably about that much at the bottom. And it's not sediment. It's just it is herbal medicine that has not gone into solution. So as over time, I figured out how to get that quote unquote sediment with a few tricks to where at the end of this whole process, which takes several weeks and multiple stages of alcohol extraction, I've typically got about almost like that much of what looks like almost like a fine sand material that's left. And anyway, you would think that making one thing over and over gets boring, but I can obsess on that stuff forever. And so, but yeah, I mean, it's different. There's tricks that you can use, modern tricks that you can use to tease, and I call it teasing more medicine out of the herbs. So, yeah.
So it's not just like making a dit de jiao where you put a bunch of stuff in alcohol and soak it. It sounds a lot more involved than that.
Yeah, it really started that way, but now it's become this involved process. Like literally by the time the dregs get to where they're done, because they actually, the dregs from the first batch actually go into fresh alcohol for future batches. It's weird. But anyway, by the time the dregs are done, we use them for mulch because they've made like the garden really, really blossom. But within probably 4 to 7 days, they're completely dust. They have given us almost all that they can give us. So, but I still think I can squeeze a little more out of there. I still think maybe a little more out of there.
So how does Zhenggu Shui differ from other liniments or topical applications? Like we have San Huang Song, herbal ice, we have Dit De Jiao or Die De Jiao, we have Posamon, woodlock oil, white flower oil. How is this different, or like in what situations would you use Zhenggu Shui versus using some of these other topicals?
So the way that Zhenggu Shui is on its own, like the way that it is like commercially, I still think it's a really great formula that I would use for quite a few things. It wouldn't go into the first aid realm like Evil Bone Water does or made properly. And it does have some limitations. But when I think of, you know, it's a really good question. Like, when do you use what? In all my treatment rooms, I have typically either I have Evil Bone Water, and then I have an oil like Postmon. I've been experimenting with Dr. Bob's lately. It doesn't have quite the same as Postmon. But I'm trying to, as much as I can, use American makers with Chinese herbs to kind of boost us all. I think of the medium that we use as a time release in a way. So if I'm looking at a liniment, what I'm looking at is something that's going to penetrate much deeper, much quicker, and maybe not have kind of a lasting result. So with something like Evil Bone Water, what you're looking at is really quick penetration, herbs delivered directly to the area, and instead of it having to go through their system, it's delivering all of that directly to it to heal. Okay. Now, we've also found that it also draws other things in, because one of the things when I was a physical therapist that's a big deal is skin permeability. Skin permeability is really, really weird. Like with ionophoresis or phonophoresis, there's some things that go into the skin very easily. There's some things that don't. There's some things that change permeability. It's kind of odd. And we found that made properly, Evil Bone Water really changes the permeability and draws other things in deeply. So then as we go up to, say, for instance, an oil I look at as being, although it can be joint, I look at it as a little more superficial, so muscle layer, and a little more time released. Then if we go up into like a gal, I look at it as being a little more superficial, even though it can be deep, but I look at it as even more time released. There's several that I'll use for something like that. And then as you go into, say, for instance, a patch, once again, you're even more time released, but it should be superficial isn't really fair for any of those, because they will penetrate deeply, but just not kind of as deeply as liniment. When I think about a liniment, which to those that don't know is like kind of a watery consistency, they should be designed where you get an immediate punch. And in some cases, like with Evil Bone Water, you're going to get a 45-minute sort of a numbness sensation. But then it's going to really start to heal the area. So, yeah, think of it just as a method of delivery, means of delivery. So, yeah.
Because I remember we had a class in school where we learned about all these things. And we said things like Zhenggu Shui is better for the bone, whereas Dit De Jiao is better for bruising. Posamon is more warm, white flower oil is more cool, and we had to memorize all these things. Then I remember getting to clinic and a student asking one of the Chinese teachers, like, oh, I have this patient with this condition, which one should I use? And he was just kind of like, you know what? They're all pretty much the same. They all invigorate blood. Just use whatever you got. And so I guess, is there a difference in terms of temperature, in terms of what kind of injury you're treating? Is there a difference between all these things? Like, would you ever use a 5-photos Dit De Jiao instead?
Well, so it does bring up a good point. So one of the reasons that I like what I'm making is because it's formulated with camphor, Zhangnao. So not synthetic, but Zhangnao. Zhangnao is one of the herbs that has a very, very unique distinction of being able to change properties somewhat. So if I just spritz or spray, I'm going to get a cooling action. Whereas if I rub in, it changes to warming, which is interesting. But when I'm looking at things like that, there's several of them that I consider to be interchangeable. So let's say, for instance, that I didn't want to use Postmon clinically. I chose Postmon clinically for a couple reasons. It penetrates exceedingly quickly. If I put 2 or 3 drops on somebody's low back, put the points in, come back after there's a heat lamp on it for 20 minutes, it will be gone. Which means it has gotten into the tissues. It has delivered the medicine the way that I want to. The only reason that I didn't use white flower, because I consider those almost same, is because I really had a bad experience when I was a kid with wintergreen.
Yeah.
And if it weren't for that, I mean, so you got to understand, you got to live with the smell of whatever you're using like every day. Have you smelled 5-photos? Have you smelled some of the other ones? And so like some of them, I'm just like, And yeah, there's some of them that are really good, but I just can't, I couldn't work with that every day. Now, when you are talking about something like a Sanwang-san, that's a different animal completely. That's a that's a absolutely acute formula. But yeah, when you're getting into a lot of them, especially with modifications, I mean, I think every clinic should have a good. I would love to see every clinic have a good Dajjal that was their own like deal, that was one of their sort of Swiss Army knives. Yeah, it's really useful. And the thing is, I think everybody should be giving them as homework. And if you have one that's good, that appeals to people, that smells good, that has, whatever the appeal is, the homework ends up becoming something that people come back for passive income for, which that's one of the things we don't learn in school. Like, if you can introduce somebody to something, say for instance, it's Qingyuan Hong, like burn cream, or say that it's curing pills, or say that it's even something like Yuping Feng San for prevention. Like when I introduce these to people, they become passive income that's really pretty incredible. People come in all the time asking for these things or asking for them for friends. I'm partial to pain ones because people will buy their annoying cousin, this pain formula instead of, having to bring them in. So, but yeah, I think it depends on, yeah, there's a lot of things. And unfortunately, today, one of the factors that's coming into it is cost as well. Some of our costs are, when I said before, Solstice bought Shengu Shui, which ended up having me create Evil Bone Water. I don't know if you guys have been watching, but Solstice has bought a lot of stuff these past 2 years. So their MO is basically they will buy the exclusive import rights, and then after they get the import rights, they will dumb the formula down so they'll get even a cheaper import. Like people don't know that what people use in China is not what they export to us. They'll get an even cheaper one, and then they'll start doing marketing, and then they'll jack the price up. So we've lost burn cream. Burn cream went from $1.60 wholesale to almost $4 and something. We've lost Possamon. That went from $8 or $9 to $14. We've lost several versions of Yin Chow that are awesome. We've lost 701 patches. 701s are the ones that bum me out the most. They're the ones that used to come on the roll. And now it's a completely different product that is almost unusable to me. And that's something that there's no easy fix for, because in lieu of a big manufacturing equipment, there's nobody that can actually produce those. So they got our number, which actually opens up a lot of opportunity for us. Oh, but on the other thing too, so we were talking about five photos, we were talking about all that kind of stuff. So sometimes you want to look at the mechanism, right? Elise Britton makes botanical easy, like a salve that's a pain relief salve. So hers works with Cordialis, which has a totally different mechanism than some of the other ones. So sometimes you want to look at the mechanism. So that one kind of works on opiate receptors, where some of them work on different types of pain receptors. So what you will find, or CBD, you'll find some people that have topical CBD, like Stacy Donaldson with Good Life, or there's several others. But if you're coming at it from different angles, different types of pain receptors, I think you have more tools in your toolbox, not only with the time released, but with the way that it hits the person. Because not every person's pain is the same way.
Is that something that theoretically you could combine those to attack the problem from different directions at once?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that's a really, really new. It's kind of a new thing. So when Stacy and I were working on combining, what do you call it? Good Life Botanical CBD topical with Evil Bone Water. We first started working on it because people were calling us and they were saying, look, when we do these two together, something weird happens. So instead of it hitting in 45 minutes, it hits in 15 minutes. And then instead of it lasting 4 hours, it lasts 6 hours. So for me, it really didn't make any sense. And I'm going to skip forward to the end. It still doesn't sometimes make a lot of sense. But what it seems like is Evil Bone Water has something about it that not only as a prep, but it helps with the delivery into the system. We've seen it also happen with pharmaceuticals as well. So things like lidocaine cream. So, you know, the lidocaine cream lasts this long. You use something like Evil Bone Water before, and then all of a sudden it lasts this long. We haven't seen any crazy amplifications where it's like over the top, but I'm not exactly sure what's going on there because, you know, going back to the stuff I used to teach in physical therapy, the transmission into and through the tissues is like a really, really weird thing. There's, you know, you expect in medicine, you expect in science there to be sort of laws and rules about how this is going to react or what you can do to reliably do this. And it's not, I don't want to say that it's arbitrary, but yeah, like if you can find combinations are really, really cool. And we're in a time right now where sharing combinations is really possible. You know, it's like the first time in the history of Chinese medicine in America where we can readily share, I did this and I did that. And even though I don't know why it worked, 10 patients were like, bam. So it's exciting times in the kingdom.
Awesome. So I've seen you use Evil Bone Water for a lot of different things. Like we talked about bone problems, bruises, sprains, bug bites, preparing points. Well, like, I guess, what are the things you can use Evil Bone Water for? And what are the things that you can't use it for? Or you would use a better alternative?
So, you know that I have to be very careful about making claims, but I can definitely tell you some things that people have reported to me because a lot of them have been surprising, and they'll make sense if you look at the individual herbs that are in the formula. So one of the things that we'll say typically when people have it, they use it as a medicine cabinet item. When in doubt, put some on it. I personally have used it to stop bleeding because it's one of those things with the high levels of Sanchi that are in it. It works quite well. So cuts and things like that, it's going to sting for a half a second, but then it's going to numb. So I've even used it on pets for that. One of the things that I really would like to see people use it more for these days, ticks absolutely hate it. We've seen a lot of reports back that with a light spritz, no ticks will get near the person. But also, if you ever find a tick and remove it, treating the area should kill anything that the tick would impart to you. Infection, it is excellent at. I've heard. I had a cat that we actually almost lost because of a couple of infected injection sites from being fixed. And within a day or two, they completely cleared up. But people have also used a Q-tip kind of on a bad tooth and whatnot. And it works exceptionally well. And it's similar to like a campophonique in that respect, except it's got the antivirals and antifungals and whatnot. Clinic treatment room, anything that's a painful point. I mean, if you've got a painful point, I typically swab. You know, and it was so funny. I think I told you before that the past probably from 2000 to 2010 were so weird because it was almost like we were practicing in a vacuum. You know, if you're not in an area that has a lot of acupuncture physicians, you're sort of just alone there doing your own thing. And it's weird. But then as you start to get people together, you start to find out more. Basically, if it's a point that I think is going to be painful, I give it a little extra attention because it's topical anesthetic. It should numb things out for about 45 minutes. So, you know, makes points pretty easy.
So instead of the isopropyl alcohol, you're using the Evil Bone Water as your swab to prepare points.
Yeah, because it's got Everclear 190 in it. And at the end of the day, at the end of the procedure, it's at least 70%. It's probably a more like 80%. So even just on the thing of the alcohol, it should be giving you more effect than just regular alcohol would. But personally, one of the things that I'll do is like before a workout, I'm a little bit older. And so some of my joints and stuff don't respond quite as well. So say, for instance, we're going to work out something, do some squats or something like that. I'll usually use a little bit of Evil Bone Water on the knees, like when I get there. But then I might have a tendency to use something that is a balm or something that is an oil, like right before, and then maybe put a sleeve on it or something so it gets the muscle layer. Like I said, Elise Britton's Botanical EZ is one of the things. I used to use, well, and I still do sometimes, some sort of CBD like Stacey Donaldson stuff, like way before. And all depends on kind of what you're looking for as far as delivery goes. I can kind of use every bit of help that I can get these days.
Yeah.
But I think that we should all have whatever your clinic is, I think that you should all have a kind of like a group of things in your arsenal and your stable, and they should meet a good bar. They should have some meat on the bone so that you can actually sell them and make a profit, right? But they should also have the ability to have return customers where people like them, you know? So if somebody likes it and it's a one or uses it and it's a one-shot deal, it's okay. And with that, you know, there comes price. There comes a few other things that are involved with it. But I mean, it can make for a good clinic, I would say that about 20% of your sales, I mean, of your income should come from product. It can very easily come from product.
You mentioned bleeding. So if you had a bleeding condition and you had evil bone water and you had Yunnan Baiyao, would you prefer one over the other?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So it depends on the level of bleeding that's going on. You know, Yunnan Baiyao stops and stops very quickly. Preferably, I would have both on hand. So say, for instance, that I need to stop arterial bleeding, I'm definitely not going to use something like evil bone water. That's just not going to happen. But say, for instance, I have a cut, I have an abrasion, I have something of that nature, I will probably use a little bit of both, because if you prep first with evil bone water, but then you put some Yunnan Baiyao powder on, then what it should do is it should numb. It should antiseptic, antiviral, antifungal, you know, the whole bit, antibiotic. But then it should also stop the bleeding. Yunnan Baiyao is great. I'm sure Solstice has already bought it, but it's still great. What I like to do with that is it's one of my favorite to mix with Qingyuan Heng, with burn cream, post-surgically or post-cut. So what you'll find is if you have some sort of like a cut of some sort, if you mix some Qingyuan Heng with Yunnan Baiyao, like really mix it in there, and then you know, put it on the band-aid, it makes for an excellent, excellent healing agent over the time of that cut, where you're usually left with very, very little scarring, almost if any, by the time it's over with. It's really, really good.
Do you use it during cupping, either before or after?
You know, I think I need like an oil medium, you know, for cupping. Now, what I will do is after I've cupped the area, then when I'm going to go back and do points, I'll swab with that just so that they're clean of any of the oil. I mean, everybody's got their own little method of doing it. I normally, if I'm going to do any Tweena, I'll do Tweena first. That's at the point when I can use some evil bone water or Shengu Shui, because it's going to penetrate instantly. But then oil would kind of be next. Cupping would maybe be next. And then if I'm going to go back and do points, that's when I would come back with like evil bone water and make sure the points were clean and didn't have any oil on them. It's not that, you know, most TCM oils wouldn't be okay to do that with, but I don't want to be the one that tests the theory that you can't really do that.
What about things like gout, arthritis, B syndrome?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Gout, fantastic. Shingles, super fantastic.
Shingles, awesome.
Yeah, just a super number of things. It's like I said, when we made it the right way with the right herbs, just exceeded my expectations. It's presented some interesting challenges, but it's cool.
I guess, are there any situations where you would say I would not use this? I would use a different topical instead.
Yeah. When you start getting into skin conditions, one of the things that I love about Chinese medicine topicals is that they're almost all broad spectrum. You know, I didn't have an innate thing with skin conditions when I went to school for Chinese medicine, but I've been working hands-on with people for years. So when they started talking about the wealth of things that were available, I was just fascinated. I was like, wow, we've got solutions for things that people really don't in dermatology. So anyway, I get out of school and I have my own practice. And in St. Pete, Florida, I decided to go with one of the, like intern with one of the best dermatologists in the area, one of the people I respected the most. And so anyway, I interned with him for a week. And after about a week, I didn't want to be disrespectful during the internship, right? But after about a week, I came to him and I said, you know, I got to ask you a question. I said, this whole week, you've seen all these people, you've seen tons and tons, hundreds of people, and you kind of tell them almost the same thing. I said, you know, you either give them one of these 3 to 5 things and you tell them, if this doesn't work, come back and see me in 2 weeks. And he's like, yeah. And he said, why do you think that is? He said, when you've looked at all the things that we've seen over the past week, how many of them fit into the thousands of color plates that you've seen in school? And I'm like, well, kind of not very many at all. And he says, exactly right. He says, what we're looking at most of the time is guesswork. He said, what you've got normally is you've got something that is several things that are layered. The immune system gets started on one thing and is freaking out, working on it, and it leaves an opening for something else to kind of come in. So we give what we think is the best approximate to what's going on. And then if it doesn't work, we go from there. And I'm like, oh, well, with Chinese medicine formulas, most of the time we are pretty good about things being what I would call broad spectrum. So what I normally tell people with something like Evil Bone Water is try it first, you know, give it a couple sprays for a couple of days. If it doesn't work, it's probably not going to be the thing. So there's a wealth of things. There's things like Emily's, there's things like Yitian oil, there's, you know, probably 15 other things that, or, and even if you want to get, if it doesn't respond, you've got Zizai Dermatology has some very specific things. But I find if it doesn't respond easily, then you might need to go to the internal and external at the same time. I mean, internal is probably what caused it in the first place. So, I look at this one as, like I said, you're kind of your Swiss Army knife. But at the same time, you have to know limitations of things. And it is powerful enough that if you use it a few times and you're not seeing much of anything, look a little deeper.
Yeah. Because sometimes I wonder if, like, is it really that broad spectrum that we can use it for all these things? Or do people fall into this trap of my only tool is a hammer and everything looks like a nail?
Yeah. And you know, that's very true. I think with the original product, it had a ton of limitations. And I used a lot of my other formulas a lot more. And the way it's making it the way it's supposed to, there still are some limitations. But there's a couple of magic herbs in there that make the difference. One in particular, Banui Dan, is just a crazy interesting herb as far as wind goes. And then, you know, when you use not only San Qi, but when you use the proper San Qi, we all know that San Qi, Pseudo Ginseng, Tian Qi is pretty magic. But you just... there's commercial products. I don't know. You know, I'm torn on it because with what the Chinese have been doing as far as the commercial products and getting them out to the rest of the world, it has made us much, much more acceptable. I mean, 20 years ago, almost every single session, the initial visit was convincing somebody that they wanted to be there, which I never do anymore. And now, you know, it's made it really, really, you know, much more acceptable, but it's kind of done so at the cost of the quality and of the, I don't know, some of the true magic of it. I think they give us just enough to get by with it. I'm telling you, that's one of the things, one of the reasons I only make what I make is because I'm dedicated to helping other American makers, you know, that are really, really have something good and to tweaking and making something the best that they can. I think that we're in this unique time right now where we can, you know, we can take a good portion of that and kind of even not only just take that and start using it, making things the way they're supposed to, but also kind of being innovative and using some things in a way that people might not have thought about it before. I mean, a lot of the processes that I'm doing would have taken a monumental effort just 10 years ago. But now the materials that I can get, the equipment that I can get, the information that I can source is just all at my fingertips and can be paid for internationally with PayPal. And there's no, yeah. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff.
What are some of the methods of application? So I got my stress fracture. What's the best way to deal with that? Should I use a spritzy spritz? Should I rub it on with a cotton ball? Can I soak it? Like, what are the differences in terms of application?
So I've always been a fan of rubbing it with cotton ball. That's just like, I think that's the best delivery system three times a day. The commercial version, two times a day, just because it dries, but that's the ethanol in it or the isopropyl in it. With Everclear, it doesn't really do that. So I've always been a fan of rubbing it in. We do provide spray tops these days just because it leads to people using it more. So normally with spritzing or spraying, that's going to be a little bit of a lighter effect. With rubbing it in, it's going to be definitely a deeper effect. You can use it as a compress for up to an hour or more, probably no more than 2 hours, I would say, just for safety's sake. But I would normally only do that in a pretty acute phase where you're trying to deliver stuff in quickly and never wrap it with something, like never wrap it with especially plastic or whatnot. It needs to breathe a little bit. But yeah, three times a day is plenty kind of to get the job done. We've had a ton of people use it in like a little bit in either a bath or in a sitz bath, or a foot bath, which we didn't think of before, but we've used since then. And whatever else you're using it, it tends to help transmit better. So there's
kind of acts as an envoy.
Yeah, there's some muscle soaks that I've become a particular fan of. Mike's muscle soaks, I think they are, Mike's recovery soaks. Pretty good magnesium, herbal and essential oil profile. But you put a little bit out in there and it kind of kicks everything off just a little bit. We use it in the dog's bath because it can help with itchy skin and whatnot, just from some of the wind clearing type stuff. So yeah, pretty easy to administer. It does not, for the most part, unless you use it a ton, it doesn't tend to discolor or stain the skin. I'm pretty sure the commercial version has some food coloring in it. And I only say that because you're dealing with an agricultural product. So to get a very uniform deep color like that with the herbs they're using is pretty much almost impossible. I mean, it comes out deep, but it's interesting. I don't know, but...
Yeah, because I know like San Huang San will stain your skin for a while, but I don't think I've ever had that happen with Evil Bone Water.
No, it's pretty good. I mean, yeah, it smells good. It's interesting. The learning process that I've had, I thought that I knew a ton about herbs before all this, but I've learned a ton. There's a totally other level of things that go on in Asia as far as the herb markets go and as far as the herb trade goes that just are way above what we're doing.
Yeah.
Way above what we're doing.
Any contraindications? Because I think we said like if you use it in a compress for too long, maybe it can cause some blistering. So don't wrap it in plastic. Let it breathe. Any other contraindications or any situations where you shouldn't use it?
In pregnancy, I definitely wouldn't use it over the abdomen. I would stay away from the sacrum during pregnancy as well. Those are two of the main ones. It doesn't seem to have any. Well, and one of the reasons I say that is we've had some patients, not some patients, we've had some docs that have used it to stop uterine bleeding. So with persistent uterine bleeding, they've used it externally and with a heat lamp. And within 2 hours, uterine bleeding that's been going on for 6 weeks, all of a sudden, in a few hours, stops, which is speaking to what the penetration is. People use it for stuff and we hear back about it and I'm like, what? we get the odd hairdresser. She's like, oh yeah, I use it my burn with a curling iron. And I'm like, you used what? Use the burn cream I gave you. Oh no, I use that. And I'm like, okay. Which, like I said, national treasure. Interesting thing. But yeah, so I wouldn't give a whole lot of contraindications. With kids, you just have to watch like sort of respiratory. So I use it on the face with care. It will, get rid of or prevent a hematoma like really, really easily. So with facial type stuff and around the eye, it can make the eye water. But if I've got a black eye, I can make a black eye gone in almost no time if I'm willing to put up with a little bit of that. The wild card that's in it is camphor. And camphor is really, really interesting. So camphor, do you mind if I tell you something geeky about camphor?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you the geeky stuff I found out. Like I said, you would think making one thing would get boring. But so anyway, up until Second World War, camphor had never been synthesized. So anyway, it was one of the primary things that was in bug repellent. Yeah, that was one of the main things. So anyway, we started going into some of the Japanese islands and we started to go into some of the subtropics and we needed bug repellent really, really badly. Well, it turns out, and a lot of people don't understand this about herbs, for an herb to have medicinal properties, you can't just grow it like in your yard. There is altitudes, there is soil, there's longitude, latitude, there's all sorts of things that go into making it the best that it can be. Well, camphor is one of those that really the only camphor trees, there's plenty of camphor trees in America, but the only camphor trees that produce enough medicine and strong enough medicine to be used that way are in this one area of Southeast Asia. Hmm. So what happened is during the World War, camphor, natural camphor, which was all there was, became more valuable per ounce than gold because that was it. That's the only place it could be produced. So all the scientists went to work trying to figure out how they were going to, where they were going to produce camphor from. Now, just a quick, before I finish with that, we use natural camphor Zhongnao, which is very rare. Most people have never even smelled it. It's not used in almost anything. So, but anyway, scientists went to work and they found out that they could actually produce natural camphor from the stumps of the southern pine tree, the dead stumps of the southern pine tree in America. The southern pine tree is the tree that produces natural turpentine, which most people also have never been exposed to or experienced. All we see now is a chemical version that's completely different. Natural turpentine is actually very medicinal, a turpentine oil. So anyway, that's the only thing that keeps camphor prices stable is we have the ability to synthesize it from the southern pine tree. Now, you skip forward, not only is there a smell difference and a feel difference, but there's a toxicity difference. So toxicity of camphor is the only thing in evil bone water that could be potentially toxic. Starts at about 2 grams. And a bottle of evil bone water has 1.8 grams in it. We found this out because somebody drank some. So we had to figure this out. So you'd have to drink the whole bottle, which they did not do. So it starts at 2 grams for synthetic. But do you know that it's 4 grams for natural? And then it's even questionable whether or not it's toxic. So there's that. And then there's a couple of other things. Natural camphor crystals and natural menthol crystals. Synthetic don't do this, but natural, you put them together and within minutes, they start to liquefy and produce an endogenous reaction. So become exceedingly cold, like really, really cold. And within 30 minutes, they're completely liquid and they stay cold for an hour or two. And there's nobody in my chemistry circle that can tell me why that happens because chemically, they're not supposed to do that. And the synthetic versions don't. So anyway, there's your geeky herb moment.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things that go on along the way of the process. There's bubbles that happen. There's little rainbow bursts that happen. There's clouds of amorphous herbs that sort of start to swirl on their own. I really feel like I'm reanimating, 30 years worth of herbs.
We were talking about ingredients and you've mentioned a couple times Everclear. And I remember when I was in school, we had a project where we had to make a ditdijow, and the teacher mentioned something about most commercial products would use rubbing alcohol, isopropyl alcohol, but he said that using real alcohol would be much better, much superior. Is there a difference between types of alcohol?
I'm really kind of glad you asked me that because they're, and I don't want to disparage anybody else's products. I don't. But when you start to get into, the biggest thing is when you start to get into cost, there becomes a big difference between potable, drinkable alcohol and then ethanol, which technically on paper is the same thing as like an Everclear grain alcohol. And then you start to get into things like rubbing alcohol, which I think by no means is the same thing, but some people will say is the same type of thing, you know? So I had to make a decision when I was doing this, if I was going to do it the way that I would want it on me and my family and my friends and my, you know, patients and not cause a problem. Because a lot of times when people have a sensitivity to something, it's not necessarily any of the one ingredients, it's several of the ingredients or the way that they mix. Something's just not right. So when I looked at Everclear, and specifically for me, Everclear 190, when you look at all the oldsters in the South, there were medicinal reasons that they would use Everclear. You know, there were
Oh, I
things that
didn't
they
know
would use
that.
for their joints. There were things that they would use it almost as a medicine in some cases. Now, if you physically put 95% alcohol on your skin, which we would call methyl in Chinese medicine, you will see something weird happen. You will see, like from CVS, you will see a drying, you will see almost an immediately blanching of the skin. You'll see a lot of things that happen that you can tell that's not good. They also have warnings on the label, right? But if you take Everclear 190 and you put it on the skin, now, I will preface this by saying I would not drink this. I mean, you might in college. I definitely would not drink this. But it actually has a moist quality to it. It moistens the skin. It does not leave it like dry like that. So it is that corn alcohol that's made at 190 proof is different than ethanol. Now, the price different, there is a huge disparity in it. So right now it is one of my bigger expenses that I pay. Now, also like from a maker standpoint, like what you're talking about with your people are when you hear in school, a lot of times you hear that it's a 60% jiao wine that you're using that people want to use for that. I think a lot of that is based on history. That is what was available, right? So if I was going to do it today, like the first things that I ever made in the first part of my career, they were approaching at the maybe 90 proof. So now I'm using 190 proof, but they're approaching at 90. I can make what I make with 150 proof, but it's a different process. With 190 proof, it is much more efficient, it can be cheaper. But it has to be multi-process. You can't just stick 190 and expect everything to come into extraction. Because remember, we talked about before, you've got things that are water soluble and things that are alcohol soluble. And so, you know, I would equate like it at large batches, what I do, almost more like a brewmaster, where you're sitting there and you're watching the batches, and depending on what they look like, what they're feeling like even the feel to them, like if they're viscous or not. You add a little bit more, you add a little bit less. So for the average person, like following like from Tom Bizzio stuff or from any of the classic formulas, I would say that that's the best thing you could do. Just follow the recipe. But as you get better, like say you've done that recipe 5 or 10 times and you see that there might be a little inefficiency in it, that's when you might want to bump up the level of the proof of the alcohol. And then you can maybe get a little bit more extraction out of it. Because I'll tell you, like I was saying before, most of what we think is just sediment or crap, it's just herbs that are not into solution. So yeah, it's a good, yeah, very good question. And that's one of my new pinch points. I'm gonna have to figure that out. I think my Everclear bill last year was like $30,000. And this year it's gonna be double that. But I would hope that I could do some combined marketing with them in the future. Maybe they at least give me like a t-shirt or a trucker hat or something or something. Which does it like if anybody ever goes into making something, the one thing that I can recommend almost more highly than anything else is get yourself some trusted suppliers, like not somebody you're doing online, like after you go through the initial phase, because the people that I've had as my trusted suppliers and whatnot have really, really watched out for me as much as I've watched out for them over the past year and a half. And to the point that it's made it over the past, I don't know, 2, 3 weeks, well, maybe 3, 4 weeks, I've gotten rid of just the blind ordering that I was doing from a couple places, and I've gotten people. And I'll tell you what, the people these days, they're starting to step up because they're not being used as often, like your representatives, your sales reps and stuff like that. They used to be just whatever back in the day. Now they're stepping up. But yeah, I would recommend that highly.
I think the question most people ask is, where do you get this stuff? How do you get it? Do you have a website? Can I buy it on Amazon?
So never on Amazon. I made a this was a tough one for me. When somebody asked for the first case, I was like, does somebody really want this? I was kind of surprised. And so flippantly, I was like, well, if you buy a case in 24, I'll sell you one. So then I had 3 cases a week. Then I had 5 cases a week. Then I had, so without advertising, we're up to 30 to 40 cases a week, which basically we've just been able to keep up with production. And one of the things that we did early on that I think was really important is we made the decision for the profession, really, is that we are not going to let people sell on Amazon. Just not going to happen. So, and we are, I basically ask my herb suppliers, my agents from China, Botanical Biohacking, I said, if this quality in this bottle was sold in China, how much would be the starting price? And they said, no less than $40. And I was like, $40? Because here in America, we have no idea about quality as far as herbs go, you know. Echinacea is echinacea. We don't care. So I said, and even though I thought that it was like this crazy pie in the sky number, I'm like, okay, whatever. I'll just say nobody can sell online for less than $40. So anyway, off we go. And we have more than one supplier that sells probably 3 cases a month of singles at $40 a bottle. So it ended up setting the price. Now, in clinic, you can sell it wherever you want. So here's what's about to happen with the scaling that we're doing, which has always been my goal. When you go to the new website that's going to come up, it's going to have a where to buy. It's going to have all the clinics throughout the nation and throughout the world that have it. And if you click on that clinic, you can find out where to walk in and buy. You're not going to really have any other information other than that. But you can go into your clinic or her clinic or his clinic. You can go and buy a bottle and whatever they sell it for you is fine. And then we'll have our online retailers, which is no less than $40, which has been the whole thing from the whole time, you know, drive people into the clinics. So if you're an acupuncture physician and you want to buy it, we only sell cases 24. We only sell to other AccuDocs at the moment. I don't know that we'll ever open up to any other markets. There would have to be a compelling reason. And there will be, within probably 3 weeks, there'll be just a practitioner login. You got all your information, bit, 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 boom. You can get your spray tops if you want. And then as soon as it ships out, you'll get an email confirmation and tracking and all that kind of jazz.
Awesome. So that's part of the expansion is making a website with a practitioner login where people can just get it through that.
Yeah, because we've been doing this all on paper and all through, and we have too many correspondences now to keep up. So what we want to do is we want to be able to expand without it losing the personal touch. I want everybody to know it's always going to be made by my hands. You know, there's no reason for it to expand beyond where it's made by my hands, you know what I mean? Or it's made and packaged and everything by us. There's really no reason for that. And so yeah, that's part of the expansion. That and custom boxes that take the art away from boxing and hopefully take away the gosh, the US Postal Service, I swear, has been a 3-year struggle with us where it doesn't matter what we do. They try to break things, but the custom box should prevent breakages too. So anyway, that's the new thing.
What has the business side of this been like for you? Because I feel like that's really different of being an acupuncturist treating patients versus being a business that manufactures a product, do you miss seeing patients? Is it this weird dichotomy that what have I gotten myself into? Or
so you're ready for the really weird stuff?
Because I feel like a lot of people go to school and they're like, I want to get my hands on people. I want to help people in a very personal way. And I feel like manufacturing a product and shipping it out is a whole different thing.
So I'm an old school ortho guy. So for 30 years, I've been doing ortho type stuff. I've got 800 hours of osteopathic internship, 600 chiropractic, 3,000 doctor world medicine. You know all the stuff. I actually have a clinic, a practicing clinic on St. Simons Island, Georgia, which is where we do all of the bottling, packing, and fulfilling of Evil Bone Water. And it is 5 hours away, 4.5 hours away from my home in St. Petersburg, Florida, which is also where the new Evil Bone Water headquarters is here, the 3,000 square foot place. So for 7-8 years now, I've been back and forth. It used to be every week, but now it's every other week. So typically I'll go up there, I'll treat for 3 days, I'll see about 50 people. And then when I come back, my associate treats people, but also we bottle, ship, pack when I'm not there, etc. And the latest weirdness is that I just got my Evil Bone Wagon, which is an RV. And up there, it's an island, so like my office is on a blind cul-de-sac that's right on the marsh. So I've got a hookup where I can come and I can be right beside the clinic and pull in there with all the supplies that I need to take up there. And then all of the stuff that I need to take back, there's a considerable amount of stuff that I need to take back for Evil Bone Water. And so far it's working great. So yeah, I've got a really weird, interesting life. So yeah, I still treat every other week. I still treat at least 50 patients. My clinic is running fully. When I'm not there, they treat, you know, I guess when I'm there, everybody combined treats at least 100 patients. Full herbal pharmacy up there. And then when I'm gone, they concentrate a little more on Evil Bone Water, but they still do a full clinical thing. So I think that the biggest thing that I can tell people from that is that the boxes that people put you in as far as what a clinic is or what, you know, of what is normal isn't necessarily normal.
Where can people find you?
The best one is Instagram, Evil Bone Water. That's the most professional one. My personal Facebook is reserved for just insane stuff, you know. Most people that learn about me professionally learn about me through the private groups, whatever private physician groups that we have. The next step is going to be the website, which I have mixed feelings about.
So when people want to order something, there'll be a website up in a few weeks that they can go to.
There will.
Awesome. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This episode can be downloaded at podcast.tcmstudy.net/session14. There, you'll also find additional links and show notes. As always, special thank you to the Patreon members for supporting this podcast, as well as the website, YouTube channel, and all the stuff that we do. If you would also like to contribute, you can go to podcast.tcmstudy.net and click on the donate button. But that's all for today. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.